Welcome to Class Matters, an educational program examining the role played by social classes and the class divide in the U.S. and around the world. I'm Rich Whitney.
I'm Paula.
We discuss matters of class because class matters. And you know, when you're talking about the division of society into classes and the capitalist economic and social system under which we live, you can kind of say that there's two fundamental ways in which the capitalist system harms working people. One way is that it exploits them at the point of production. In other words, the basic Marxist analysis in which the wages that working people are paid represent only a fraction of the actual wealth they produce. So there's exploitation. The system is based on exploitation. But then the other fundamental aspect is that the capitalist system also victimizes us as consumers. The principal way in which it does this is because of the profit motive. Capitalist enterprises, capitalist businesses are always looking to minimize costs and sell as many of their goods and services as they possibly can.
Even if they have to get the government to force it on you.
Yeah, that's right.
Or in you.
Yeah, that's right. While doing that at minimum cost. And probably the archetype of what I'm talking about in terms of victimization is the Ford Pinto case from back in the mid-1970s, when it was discovered that the Ford Pinto automobile that Ford Motor Company was producing at the time was very vulnerable to rear-end explosions if there was a rear-end collision. Basically, the car was built in a manner that was unsafe, so if it was hit with any significant force from the rear, the car might literally explode. And it did explode. There are a number of instances of this. What made that case particularly notable was that a whistleblower, someone, disclosed documents proving that if the Ford Motor Company had simply spent, I think it was something...
Well, they knew this.
Right, they knew this. That if they had simply spent something like $18 more to put another bit of metal shielding on the back or whatever, that this would not happen. But Ford Motor Company executives basically determined that the cost of simply paying people off in lawsuits after they were injured or killed as a result of these explosions would add up to being a little bit less than the cost of fixing the problem. So they just kept doing it, and they didn't fix the problem.
They
right?
decided it was worth it.
Yeah, they
just
decided
like
it was
Madeleine
worth it.
Madeleine Albright said that the deaths of 500,000 Iraqi children was worth it.
Right. And we've seen countless examples of this. And I know we've been talking a lot about the pharmaceutical industry, big pharma, the medicine industrial complex a lot on this program lately, but that's the reason for it. The same kind of principle is in operation here, where from the standpoint of the big pharmaceutical companies, it's a lot cheaper to withhold information, basically keep it secret. And then if something does get out about the harms caused by a vaccine or a particular type of medicine, then to try to attack it through the media, attack the critics through the media, rather than to just fix the problem or withdraw the product from the market in most cases.
It's more egregious, and that's why we're talking about it. In the case of the Ford Pinto, the government did not force people to buy a Ford Pinto, number
one.
That's
true, yeah.
Number two, if people were injured or killed or their loved ones were killed in an explosion, they could sue Ford Motor Company.
Right.
That's number two. In the case of vaccines, Congress in 1986 immunized
right.
Big Pharma from being sued for vaccine injury. You can still sue them if some other product kills you, but you can't sue them for vaccine injuries.
Yeah.
So those are two outrageously egregious example of government control by a corporation that is unprecedented.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even imagine Ford Motor Company trying to get the government to force everyone to buy a Ford Pinto, or trying to get the government to say, we're going to go against the Constitution. You know where it says in the Constitution that you have the right to seek damages through the tort system? We want you to erase that for us.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think even they would be so audaciously bold, so outrageously corrupt, as to think they could buy Congress off. But guess who did? Big Pharma.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And that's another aspect of this, as we talked about on this program recently, it's very, very cost effective to buy members of Congress.
Exactly.
Right? Rather than fix the problem or withdraw products from the market that have been proven to be unsafe.
Oh, and if you can get the government to mandate your product, again, that's an outrageous escalation of corporate control of government.
Yes, yes. You literally have a captive audience then, a captive market, rather.
Exactly.
So with that in mind, I wanted to share with you a couple of articles, one just real quick take on one, and then we're going to do a little deeper dive into another, probably be a two-parter here on this one. But just wanted to mention in this regard, because it's so outrageous, this is from the Children's Health Defense website.
Should be all over the cable news.
Should be.
It should be. The 24 News are always looking for news. No, we're going to talk about Kate's cancer. Let's not talk about what the CDC is covering up on Americans' health.
Yeah. And this article is entitled Staggering Arrogance, Experts Rip CDC for Redacting All 148 Pages of Information on Myocarditis After COVID Shots. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, earlier this month responded to a Freedom of Information Act request for documents containing information about the frequency of myocarditis in people who received the COVID-19 vaccines by producing a fully redacted 148-page document. And basically what this goes on to say, they actually got two documents. One was largely redacted. The other one, all 148 pages of it were completely redacted. So what they produced was completely useless. And it's just so outrageous, right? You know, the public has a right to know whether or not these COVID shots, these so-called vaccines, I call them the fake scenes, are causing harm. And so reporters have done the responsible thing in a few cases, used the Freedom of Information Act to get the information. And what they did was respond by producing a document that was literally fully redacted.
Okay, like I said before, but it bears repeating because I don't think people get it. There shouldn't have to be a Freedom of Information Act for citizens to get information from government agencies.
Right, yeah.
That was another thing the Congress of the 80s did. They didn't just immunize Big Pharma from being sued.
Right.
They actually responded to the problem of public agencies not releasing data to the public, which is, should be public data.
Yeah.
It should be public data, and it should be known by the public, and you shouldn't have to ask for it. They're supposed to release a report every year on what they're doing, where they spent their money, what they produced, what they found out. All of that should be released every year the way it used to be in the old days before the 70s, before people started going, well, look what they did. Look what they did. Oh, so Congress is going to fix that, or the corporations and the agencies are going to fix that by not showing what they did.
Yeah.
No, 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 no. They have to show you what they did. They're getting paid with public money. They're a public agency. The CDC is a public agency paid for by public money. Although now I guess they get it from the big pharma, different problem. But they're supposed to be accountable to the public. They're supposed to literally be transparent, but also report to the public.
Forthcoming, not just transparent, but forthcoming.
Every year, at least, they have to release reports saying what they're doing. And instead of fixing that problem, Congress makes this Freedom of Information Act thing, which is like, well, if you specifically ask for something from a public agency that's supposed to be public, and you happen to guess, because you know from other things, right, that what it is you're looking for.
Right.
And you happen to say, hey, we want this about this, and the public agency feels like giving it to you, well, then maybe you can get it.
Yeah.
And that's their big reform, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so now the agencies have gotten so blatantly arrogant that they just hand you a 148-page, totally blacked-out document and say, here, we fulfilled the request by the law.
Yeah, talk about making a mockery of the law. I mean, it's just crazy.
Where is it in the law that says, well, the Freedom of Information Act doesn't mean you actually have to give the information if you don't feel like it. You can just black it out.
Yeah, and if you think about it, the only thing that should be redacted is personal information to protect people's privacy. So, yeah, I can see redacting the names of individual victims, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that should be redacted.
Well, they do that all the time. You don't have to redact it. They do that all the time. Any medical report, any medical journal you read says this patient was a 40-some-year-old, they say female or male, they say the age, they
right.
say the pre-existing conditions, and then they say what happened.
Yeah.
You don't have to say their name.
Right, right.
And it's not revealing personal information that's identifiable to go 44-year-old female.
Right.
Right. There's a lot of 40-year-old females
right,
out
yeah.
there. So, yeah, no, that is not a good enough excuse. They could yeah. maybe have the names in a different place, the file, so they could, you know, look
well,
up.
Well, that's what I'm
people.
Saying. Sometimes yeah. those are what they legally can
but the report,
fail to disclose.
They should put out reports, as I said,
yeah.
on a regular basis, at least once a year, that says what they did and what they found and why the public's paying them.
Yeah.
That's what we're paying them for. We're not paying them to cover up for big pharma.
Yeah, yeah.
It's ridiculous. And people just accept this, you know? It just blows my mind. It just shows people can get used to any kind of repression or police state.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, that you can find at the Children's Health Defense website. Read more about that. Meanwhile, we want to go to another site we've gone to a lot lately. The Midwestern Doctor website, MidwesternDoctor.com is where you can find this.
Well, this guy spends so much time doing research. The least we can do is spread it around a little bit.
I know. Very prolific writer. Amazing just the volume of great work that he's doing right now on this topic.
Can't you picture him in high school? Just turning in 78-page reports and
yeah,
doing all kinds of reasons. His teacher's like, I asked for 3 pages.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. It is kind of like that. But a Midwestern Doctor is the pseudonym of the author who doesn't want to give his real name because...
Well, see, there you go. He can redact it very easily and still put out all this information. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, yeah. But he keeps his real name secret in order to avoid repercussions since
yeah.
we know that many doctors have lost their licenses or otherwise been fired, etc. There's adverse consequences for going public and exposing some of the crimes of the pharmaceutical industry.
Voltaire says, find out who you're not allowed to criticize, and you will find out who rules you.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to criticize Big Pharma,
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah. So this article, very recent, published March 21st, is entitled The Century of Evidence That Vaccines Cause Sudden Infant Deaths.
And you know what is so embarrassing to me is I actually literally worked in a nursery in the 70s, and I was taught... Well, babies die, sudden infant death is caused by their immature breathing apparatus.
Right.
And it starts at 2 months and it goes to about 6 months. Two months to 6 months. And it did occur to me to wonder, well, shouldn't it start then right after birth if that's
right.
when they're most immature? And never, though, occurred to me, oh, when is the well baby schedule? Oh, I know, 2 months, 4 months, 6 months.
Yeah.
Didn't occur to me that someone else pointed it out. And then I'm like, dough.
Yeah.
Why didn't I think of that?
Well, it did occur to a Midwestern doctor, among others.
Well,
and,
he's a smart boy.
Yeah. So the article begins, the sudden adult death syndrome, SADS, that was seen worldwide after the COVID-19 vaccines rolled out was so unmistakable that it made the general public see how much their government had lied to them. What is less known, however, is the link between vaccines and the sudden death of children, euphemistically called sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS. Like SADS, SIDS has a clear-cut relationship to vaccination. In the case of SIDS, there is over a century of evidence to substantiate it. Like SADS, our healthcare authorities have worked tirelessly to conceal this link, even when faced with significant protests from the public who knew what is happening. For the most part, these authorities have succeeded.
Well, only the parents of the infants that died really knew. Some of them didn't even connect it. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They knew. I remember seeing a van, a bus, that one guy that, what is his name, Dale Bigwood?
Dale Bigtree.
Yeah. And he actually took a bus across the country.
Oh, that's right.
Talking about vaccine injuries. And the bus was just signed with the names of all the little dead babies. I'd never heard of the trip, number one. I'd never heard of him. And I'd never known that all those babies had died. It was
yeah.
just like shocking.
Yeah, yeah.
If the media doesn't tell you, it didn't happen.
Yep. So the Midwestern Doctor continues, as a society, we've come to see SIDS as a normal event that does not require an investigation each time another child dies from vaccination. And then he goes on into a little bit more introductory remarks explaining his motivations and so on, but we'll skip over that. But then he goes into a little bit of economic analysis here. He says, being successful in business is often a question of finding a way to break a rule that should not be broken, capitalize upon the economic benefit from doing so, and finally leverage this newfound wealth to ensure that the rule can continue to be broken.
Or just buy a Congress and make it change.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
For example, you are not supposed to bribe public officials. Still, if you find a way to, such as through quote-unquote lobbying, it creates a massive advantage over smaller competitors who still follow the rules. And as recent years have shown, the paid-off officials will eventually legalize each novel form of bribery.
Exactly.
Historically, the best example of this predatory capitalism is told within The Robber Barons, meaning the book, and he's got a link to it. It tells the story of a group of conniving scoundrels, such as John D. Rockefeller, who broke every rule imaginable in the post-Civil War era and monopolized America's fledgling industrial system to become some of the wealthiest individuals in history. This story is still relevant today because these economic predators defined our national character, and in the century since their rise to power, have applied similar tactics to dominate almost every facet of American life.
Well, the difference is that when those people were becoming fabulously wealthy, well, remember there was no safety net system back then.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have unemployment insurance. They didn't have welfare. You just basically starved to death. Unless you could find a job, the people back then went, hey, why is that person a millionaire? They didn't have billionaires, right? Why is that person a millionaire and I'm sitting here watching my children go hungry?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They thought it was wrong. Then John D. Rockefeller was actually the one that first hired a public relations consultant. I remember my dad telling me about this. When the coal miners went on strike and the families were living in tents, he sent the goons in, the Pinkertons in, and they shot a bunch of people and then they burned women and children, the wives and children of the miners,
right,
to death in the tents. And Americans were outraged by this. Well, Americans with a conscience were outraged by this. So he hired a public relations thing, and the public relations guys will go out and give nickels to orphan children.
Right, that's right.
So he'd drive down the street in his big fancy car and little urchins would come running up and he'd give them a dime, and then he'd get the newspaper reporters to go, oh, isn't John D. Rockefeller a wonderful,
magnanimous
man? Oh, my goodness, he's just wonderful. And now look at it when people do this. Oh, Bill Gates, he's such a philanthropist.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, Elon Musk, he's going to save us all.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but if someone has $1 billion, they got it by dishonest or immoral ways or both.
Yep, yep. Contemporarily, one of the best examples of this principle lies within the COVID-19 response, where pandemic profiteers flagrantly violated countless critical rules that had been well established before the pandemic.
Just think about how many people died that they got away with the deaths of.
Yeah.
With those rules, first the COVID rules where you can't have early treatment, that's outlawed.
Yeah.
Then you go, if you're sick enough to go in the hospital, well, then they have to give you remdesivir. That killed a lot of people.
Yeah.
And then the vaccines.
Yeah.
You know, how many people has that killed? Far more than John D. Rockefeller, even though he was an evil son of a gun, right?
Right.
But yeah, these people are getting away with it. They're making plans to do another one.
Yeah, and speaking of the early treatment, another little news item that you probably did not hear about, the Frontline Doctors Organization, the Frontline Critical Care Doctors, Dr. Pierre Corey, among others, had filed a lawsuit against the Centers for Disease Control over the restrictions on information on ivermectin and the public relations campaign against ivermectin, which was and remains an effective treatment against COVID, especially if taken early. And they won. They settled the lawsuit. And now the CDC and the FDA have been forced to retract all of those social media posts and public pronouncements talking about, oh, don't take ivermectin, that's horse paste.
That's horse? Are you a horse?
You're right, exactly.
Oh,
all that stuff.
Oh, my God.
They've been forced to back down and take that stuff away because it wasn't true. Ivermectin was and remains an effective treatment for COVID.
Well, see, the thing is, that's not disinformation or misinformation or malinformation. If the ruling class puts it out, that makes it information you must swallow and believe.
Yeah, that's right. Continuing with the Midwestern Doctor article, deadly hospital protocols with no evidence supporting them were mandated throughout America. Untested experimental vaccines with highly concerning safety data were rushed to the market.
And the data was withheld.
Yeah. The manufacturers of these deadly products obtained complete immunity from any harm they caused. And the general populace lost their fundamental human rights through forced lockdowns and mandatory vaccinations. Much of this was illegal, but because an emergency situation was created, the wiggle room existed to bypass every legal protection afforded to the public. Pfizer bent every rule it could and gained significant power in the process, all while making vast sums of money. In the pharmaceutical industry, two recurring issues always emerge. First, how to regularly test countless experimental drugs with high potential toxicities to identify the one that could become a commercial success. And then second, how to create guaranteed markets for unsafe pharmaceuticals with questionable benefits. In most cases, bribery plays a crucial role in addressing these challenges. For example, I documented the Bush family's involvement in forcing SSRI antidepressants onto the market, and the FDA's subsequent decades of complicity in this disaster by suppressing all evidence of the extreme harm from these drugs. The FDA ignored a tsunami of credible adverse reports, put gag orders on employees who tried to report them, authored fake studies defending SSRIs, and even fought against congressional investigations. The SSRI saga, I would argue, provides an excellent case study for understanding many aspects of the FDA's egregious conduct throughout COVID-19. And of course, he's got links to the previous articles and studies. Then, once the regulatory hurdles have been cleared, these commercial needs are often fulfilled by exploiting vulnerable groups who are either experimented upon or forced to become a captive market for various lucrative pharmaceuticals. In the earlier days of American medicine, dangerous medical treatments were often forcibly tested on prisoners, colonized indigenous populations, the mentally disabled, and orphans.
Well, that's what they did in Ukraine. The U.S. bioweapons were tested on people in a mental hospital in Ukraine.
Yeah, yeah. And then he's got a link to a Wikipedia article that documents this. Following the Nuremberg trials, where many Nazi doctors argued that they should not be convicted, as their ethical principles in human experimentation matched those conducted throughout the United States, and the anti-vivisection movement campaigning against unethical human experimentation, a changing political climate made it far more difficult to continue these experiments. The business-focused members of the medical field thus reluctantly switched to conducting future grotesque experiments less visibly.
Well, they use mice and rabbits and beagles.
Yeah, and monkeys.
That? Yeah, oh yeah, it's horrible what they do to those animals.
Yeah.
Remember when Fauci was outed for the beagles that they were testing sandfly medicine on? And they put their heads in a vise and kept their eyelids open and then turned sandflies loose on them?
Right.
And even that didn't get people mad enough to prosecute Fauci. What does the man have to do?
Yeah.
How many people has he murdered? How many beagles has he tortured?
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Jeez.
This new approach included experiments on children in foster care that were no longer published in medical journals, outsourcing this research to the third world, where no one would raise questions.
Well, they did in Africa. Oh, in India, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, not till a whole lot of people are harmed.
Right. And regularly making use of the military's command structure to force lower-ranking servicemen to participate in highly controversial so-called research studies.
Oh, yeah, and they didn't even ask him. I remember coworkers of mine who didn't want the flu shot when that became mandatory. I remember this one woman who was in the Army. I think she was in the Army before. She's like, you know, they just lined us up and came down the aisle and they'd give us shots, she goes. And some people, every once in a while, every fifth person would get an extra one. And they never told us what the shots were. This was not informed consent.
Yeah.
They would just line them up and shoot them up.
Yeah, yeah. Almost every successful business is built upon creating a source of recurring revenue. And the entire pharmaceutical industry is structured to do this in as many ways as possible. For example, the industry continually funds corrupt guidelines that advocate for large segments of the population to consume countless non-beneficial and often harmful pharmaceuticals then sells more drugs to treat the side effects of the original pharmaceutical they spread to every corner of America. This process can best be observed in the elderly, upon whom countless drugs are prescribed, until eventually the combined toxicity of these medications causes enough degeneration to land the patient in an isolated nursing home or hospital. After this, even more, sometimes necessary medical therapies are provided until a critical point is inevitably reached and the elder dies.
Oh, remember when I went to stay with my grandmother when they said, man, she's dying, and you're a nurse, you can go stay with her. She's dying, she won't get out of bed, she sleeps all day, it's just horrible, you know, she's on her way out. So I get there and I look at her dresser, and her dresser has got, there had to have been 25 pill bottles up there, right? I'm like, what the hell's all this, right? So the next time I accompanied to her doctor, I took all those pills in, and I held each one up, and I go, does she really need this? The doctor's like, no. Does she really need this one? No. And we got down to the, I think he only two drugs he thought she needed. One was digoxin. I can't remember the other one. So we took her off all those other drugs, and whoa, she perked right up. Yeah. She woke up every day. She got out of bed. She got dressed. She ate breakfast. I mean, she was like her old self again. And my family's like, oh, you're a miracle worker. No, I'm not.
Yeah.
I just stopped those drugs.
Yeah,
she didn't need to be on all those drugs. It was horrible. But anyhow, yeah, I was a miracle worker. I made her come back to life by taking away all those drugs.
So as a result of these unnecessary medical therapies, so-called the drugs, care in the final year of life accounts for approximately 25% of all spending by Medicare. In contrast, societies worldwide have more traditional forms of medicine that do not prioritize profit and emphasize cultivating vitality. Within them, you will often observe elders who maintain their health and functionality until the very end of their lives. He also notes that one study found taking away a few non-necessary drugs from elderly patients reduced their overall risk of death by 56%.
We'll
so
see.
There you go.
Yeah.
So you were a pioneer, Paul.
I was a pioneer.
Yeah, that's right. Amongst the most common recurring pharmaceutical products are the endless annual vaccinations, and those with knowledge of this business model suspected that once the COVID vaccines were shown to be highly ineffective, health officials would pivot to adopting an annual COVID immunization program instead of being discarded, which they tried to do, but due to public resistance against the vaccines, were unable to enshrine it upon the populace.
And here's the thing. It's double think. It's double talk. They're telling us this is a pandemic, 2020. They told us it was a pandemic. Well, a pandemic, by definition, is a very limited phenomena, right?
Right.
It usually lasts a year, maybe two, and then it's over. That's what it means. It means that a disease comes that's not normally goes through the human population, and it sweeps over, and it gets a whole bunch of vulnerable people, and a whole bunch of people die. And for a pandemic, it used to mean a whole lot of people die over a whole lot of countries.
Right.
Now it means three people died in six countries. The WHO declares a pandemic. But whatever. The point is, how can it be a pandemic and also be endemic? It can't be both. But now they're telling us that, oh yeah, what you need is a COVID vaccine every year because pandemic. No.
Yeah, yeah.
This is 5 years into it. It is not a pandemic anymore. It is what we call endemic, and that is not an emergency.
Yeah, yeah. Furthermore, a key driver behind the mRNA vaccine technology was its rapid production cycle, which enabled it to be deployed on short notice. In contrast, existing vaccines, like the flu vaccine, must be manufactured far in advance, which explains why the annual flu shot almost always ends up not matching the circulating strain. Something that is less appreciated about each of these universal vaccine programs is that when individuals are given a choice not to receive a vaccine, many will opt out. For example, between 80% to 90% of children are vaccinated. This figure includes influenza vaccinations. In contrast, last year, only 50.2% of the adult population received a flu shot, and in many cases, the adults who did vaccinate only did so because of work requirements. The key demographics I know of who are forced to receive vaccinations in the United States are pets, children, those in foster care, the elderly, prisoners, service members, students, and healthcare workers. Well, this has been kind of a long introduction. We haven't even really got to the main subject, but we'll return to this subject next week again. The article we're sharing with you is entitled "The Century of Evidence That Vaccine Caused Sudden Infant Deaths," and it's at the MidwesternDoctor.com website. Thanks for listening to Class Matters. We'll be with you again next Monday.